Welcome into Crossing Broadcast on a Monday. I think I introduced the show in Spanish last week, but I'm not doing it this week. This week we have a lot. There's a lot to get into today. I'm very excited. I hope you're feeling the excitement out there. I know it's a rainy day. Rainy days typically make you feel a little hazy. They make you feel a little bit sad. But today's going to be a good day, and I feel it, and I'm sure you feel it too. And we have a lot to get into, and I dropped some ideas there over on Twitter ahead of this one because there are some big things happening in Philly, and I thought, you know what, we're going to get into it today. And I was like, for a second, I went, maybe I'll get somebody to come on the show, right? Like, maybe. And sometimes when I do that, it's like, all right, there are a couple of things that I don't feel as comfortable or confident talking about. So I'll bring somebody on to kind of lend their professional take on things. And today was one of those days where I said, no, there's plenty to get into. Joey B checking in over on YouTube. Good morning from Colorado. Joey, thanks for checking in. What time is it out in Colorado right now? Is that 2 hours behind? Is that mountain time? Is that 10 o'clock? I think it's 10 o'clock. 10 o'clock, Craig behind the glass, putting up the big two. Also says we need an oat milk update. Unfortunately, Joey, I don't have an oat milk update. I drank my coffee extra early this morning, which is not something I typically do. I still have not been sent a pallet of La Colombe oat milk draft lattes, which I have to admit, I'm disappointed that they have not heeded the call to action, and sent that stuff over. But it's okay. There's a lot that I want to get into today, and I certainly want to hear from all of you in the comments section on YouTube, on Facebook, and those of you who are watching on Twitter. By the way, love and appreciate all of you who check in on Twitter. Love and appreciate all of you who check in on Facebook. Head over to YouTube, youtube.com/crossingbroad. Get yourself subscribed. Ring the bell. Get the notifications whenever we go live with any show. It's this show, right? It could be Crossed Up, Big Bet Bob, Big Baseball Bob, and Anthony Sanfilippo and Sanfoni and San Francisco. And they've had a lot that they've had to get into. And I'm pretty sure that they're recording today, I think, maybe, or tomorrow. I saw Bob put out the Red October newsletter to recap what happened this weekend. So a lot of Phillies coverage going on around Crossing Broad. We'll get into a little bit of that today. Hassan Reddick got traded. The Eagles have gotten worse by virtue of that trade. We talked about this when it was a hypothetical trade a few months ago, or a month ago, month and a half ago. I think the first episode, second episode I did of this show saying, if you move Hassan Reddick, it's hard to say that you're getting better when he is arguably your best, most dynamic defensive player who you can also rely on. Isn't a hypothetical like a N'Kobe Dean is at linebacker. They didn't get better. We're going to break that down as well. The Flyers tonight taking on the New York Islanders in what is absolutely a must-win game. And I think at this point, you know me well enough to know that, like I always say, it's not a hot take if it's the right take. And in this case, it is not a hot take to say that tonight's game against New York is a must-win for your team, your town, your Philadelphia Flyers. A team that actually is getting somebody back, by the way, Jamie Drysdale will be back in the lineup tonight. They also added another guy. They brought over a guy who they thought was long gone in Ivan Fedotov. We'll get to that as well. But I want to start today with a little bit of positivity. Let's get the Monday, you know, manic Monday. You know, we're going to get it going. And Joey B also brings up WrestleMania in Philly this weekend. I'm going to give you some thoughts on WrestleMania at the end of the show. Craig has to remind me. He's supposed to remind me. We'll see if he reminds me or not. If he doesn't, you'll go over to It's Just Wrestling, and I'll put a show out this week to kind of give some WrestleMania predictions. But a team that is getting somebody back and who all of a sudden goes from being an afterthought to not quite an afterthought, one that's going to be a team that's worth keeping an eye on, although I have no idea what it's going to look like, that, of course, is your team, your town, Philadelphia 76ers. They're going to be getting back Joel Embiid. Woj dropped the bomb this morning. The Woj bomb this morning said that Embiid is expected to be back in the lineup imminently. Well, does that mean he's going to be in the lineup against the Oklahoma City Thunder on Tuesday night while Kyle Pagan is out slinging hot dogs on his impromptu dollar dog night? It's entirely possible. Sixers play the Thunder on Tuesday night. Then they're at Miami on Thursday, at Memphis on Saturday, and then at San Antonio on Sunday. Obviously, he's not going to play in the back-to-back. He'll play one of those games. I see no scenario where you see him play at Memphis and at San Antonio on back-to-back days, given the amount of time he's missed. But it should be good to have Joel Embiid back. Now, the question that I am still struggling with and that I certainly would like to hear from people in the comments section on is this something that really changes your expectation for what the Sixers are and what they're going to be and what their potential ceiling is this season? Because from where I sit, I say I see no way that Joel Embiid is remotely healthy. He's certainly not going to be 100%. Is he 80%? What did his conditioning look like while he was out for the flap surgery? You know, if we're going to get back like a 60% Joel Embiid or a guy who like is in decent shape but not in good cardio shape and is going to kind of be lumbering up and down the court, well, then I think we know how this is going to go. We've seen this movie many times before. So I don't totally see it, but I am excited to see what happens because at this point, the Sixers had fallen out of relevancy so much that this is like the one thing, if you're an only Sixers fan, right? If you don't like any of the other teams in town, or you don't actively care about the Phillies, you don't care about the Flyers, and you're waiting for the Eagles to come back around, and you don't care about the Union, and you really are a one-for-one sports fan, I guess this would matter a little bit more to you. By the way, one-for-one, four-for-four, we'll be getting to that other show later in this one. Some thoughts on the return of the Cuz, three episodes in. We'll get there a little bit later as well. But the Philadelphia 76ers, when you look at what they have down the stretch, we talked about this. They're home against OKC, at Miami, at Memphis, at San Antonio. They welcome the Pistons to town. The Pistons are dreadful. They welcome Orlando to town, and then they finish the season against a Brooklyn Nets team that has struggled, is putting it nicely. Sixers, as of right now, are in the eighth seed in the Eastern Conference. You wanted to be able to avoid the play-in game. They're only two wins away from Indiana for the sixth seed. Is it possible that you get back Joel Embiid and you're able to go on a run here? Like, if you look at these games, the only game that really isn't winnable is tomorrow against OKC. The rest of those games, it's entirely possible that you could put together a team and an effort where you win out the rest of the way. Can that get you to the sixth seed? I think it could. I think it's entirely possible. And even Orlando, right? So if you pull up the standings, and Craig, I don't know if you can pull up the standings really quick, but it's really tight between the eighth seed and even the third seed in the conference and the fourth, right? It's a difference of the fourth seed Knicks have 44 wins. The Magic have 43. The Pacers have 42. The Heat have 41. And the Sixers have 40. So if you win out, or you come, I don't know, like you have one loss, two losses, you could theoretically end up in that 4-5 matchup. At worst, you should end up in the 6. And if you're going to take on Cleveland in the first round, chef's kiss. Like, if you had to pick a spot, I would much rather see this Sixers team with a whatever percent Joel Embiid in that 6th seed to take on a Cleveland team that I think is beatable. And then that would set you up in the next round to potentially face a Milwaukee team that I think would also be a team that you match up decently well against as long as Joel Embiid is like 85% healthy. If he's less, no shot. The one thing you don't want to do is end up in a situation where you're playing against Boston. Boston is head and shoulders the best team in this conference. There's a case to be made they are the best team in the league. You can make a case that this Celtics team, if they lined up against that big three of Kevin Garnett, Paul Pierce, and Ray Allen, could have beaten them. It is a fantastic team. Now, do I think that Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown have it up here? Do I think that they have it here and here to get the job done for the Celtics? I don't. I would not pick them to win the title. Can they win the conference? I think it's entirely possible. But that's why you don't want to end up in the eighth seed. You really don't want to end up in that 4-5 just because of what that would mean for the next round, assuming everything else plays out the way you want it to. If I were Nick Nurse, my goal would be get that sixth seed, play Cleveland, and then let the chips fall where they may. I don't know what Ford is upset in the comments. I don't know why he's so sad. You know, he thinks that the Sixers have no chance of winning. Listen, if they play Cleveland and Embiid is relatively healthy, I think they can beat Cleveland. Cleveland doesn't scare me in the least bit. So we'll see. But that is a little bit of exciting news. Like, there, we're starting to get a little bit of hashtag positivity this morning because positivity is what we feed on here. The Crossing broadcast on a Monday. Kinker, by the way, back on Thursday. I don't know who he has. Craigles, let me know in the private chat over there if Kinker has procured a guest for Thursday or not yet. I'm in this weird situation. I'll be honest and transparent about this. So our parent company that bought Crossing Broad, they have a whole bunch of meetings scheduled. And now I'm on more of these meetings and calls than I used to be. And so, like, I have important meetings that are happening on Thursdays right at noon. And it's a matter of, is it going to be a 15-minute meeting? Is it a half-hour meeting? So now Kinker is definitely starting every Thursday. And if those calls get moved to every other week, then it makes things a little bit easier. If they're going to be every week, then I'm going to probably be that, like, second-half sub-in kind of bullpen guy. You know, and we'll see. But it's very, you know, the whole show here, I think this is working so far. This on Monday, whatever this thing is that we do together, the numbers in the podcast feed especially show that apparently this is working well, and many of you are very happy with it, so I appreciate you joining here. And then Thursday's show, Kinker going with the guest, had Trevor Harris on, last week, who's almost become like an unofficial third host on this show, which is a wild development, a guy, kind of our man in Florida, who's, I don't know, serving as a spy for Philly sports fans down in the Southeast. So anyway, that's about the show. Now, let's get the Sixers out of the way. Well, when we come back in a week and they will have played four more games, we'll have a much better idea of what this team looks like and what their chances look like going into the playoffs. And we'll obviously know if they're in position to be in those play-in games or if they're going to solidify that sixth seed. Keep an eye on that. Now, let's get to the Eagles because they made a trade that we knew for a while that they were looking to make, and it's one that was a mistake and will probably prove to be a mistake this season. But Howie Roseman decided to move on from Hassan Reddick. They made the move for Huff earlier in the offseason. They're clearly trying to bank on the idea that Huff's stats weren't just an example of a good guy on a bad team, and that he's going to be able to replace or replicate a lot of the production, if not all of the production, of Hassan Reddick from even a year ago. And they move off of Reddick, who they clearly didn't want to pay $20-plus million a year to. And to me, that it still feels like a hard sell. If the goal is to show the fan base that we intend on competing for a Super Bowl, trading away a guy who is easily your best pass rusher is not the way to get it done. Now, again, Huff could be really good. We don't know. We don't know what it's going to look like. You have to hope that in bringing in Vic Fangio, the architect of the defense, you bring him in, you hope that he's going to be able to maximize what you get from Huff. But I'm truly concerned, and actually this is great. This is a great pull by Craig from Next Gen Stats. Hassan Reddick played twice as many snaps on early downs last season compared to Bryce Huff, generating 17 more pressures than him on such downs. Reddick was one of three players to record six or more pressures in eight games in 2023, along with Parsons and Allen. Now, Craig, pull up that graphic a little bit closer, because that's good stuff out of you. Nice zooming. Craigle's out here, ready to go, making that $280,000 salary. What a guy. Anyway, you take a look at the snaps. 70%, 70.3 for Reddick, 30.2% of his snaps for his team, for Huff. Pressures, 44 to 27. Pressure rate is higher for Huff, 19.3 to 13.4. The average get-off time, virtually identical, off by 0.02 of a second. And then the average time to pressure, roughly a tenth of a second difference. Now, I don't know, guys. I really don't know. If we look back to 2 years ago, Reddick was an absolute monster. He was a beast. He was being utilized in a way that made him look like one of, if not the most dangerous pass rusher in the league. And then you go to last year where he wasn't generating as many disruptive plays in the backfield. And then ultimately between Sean Desai and Matt Patricia, they eventually had him dropping in coverage. And then that was a question of, are they just trying to be unpredictable? Do they feel like they're seeing something that he's just not able to get to the quarterback the same way? And now they're going to try to make him more versatile. I don't know. But again, like, I think it's really hard to sell a fan base on the idea that, hey, we're going to part with our most dynamic pass rusher, the guy who actually has proven to be a valuable commodity at getting to the quarterback, and then say that you're still trying to win a Super Bowl. But look, they've made some other moves. You have to imagine that in the draft, they're going to have to address this. They're certainly going to have to address linebacker, which they still have not done to a satisfactory level from where I sit or where I stand. Right now I'm standing. But N'Kobe Dean, once again, are you going to go into a season with N'Kobe Dean as this like key cog in your defense when he's been unable to be healthy? And there are still plenty of questions saying that, like, we don't actually know what N'Kobe Dean is going to be at this level. Can he replicate his production from college? And one would think no. And there were questions about his size. And again, we haven't seen it because he hasn't been able to stay healthy. So a lot of questions defensively there. Obviously, we talked about the last couple of weeks about how big the addition of Saquon Barkley is offensively and just in terms of the dynamic elements that he's going to be able to bring to this team. But defensively, they still have a lot of questions. They still don't have a guy. Now, you might be a big play Slay fan. I think he's fine. He certainly has fallen off of where he was at his peak. The question now is, can they go out in the draft and can they find a guy that's going to be able to start from day one across from Darius Slay? From big play Slay. Can they find that guy? It's a lot. It's a lot of pressure on a young guy. Safety-wise, they brought back CJGJ, which is great. Will they get dynamic play out of their safeties? Will they have somebody who can line up with CJGJ in a meaningful way? Are you going to be able to get enough good safety play that you're going to be able to shift him into the slot when necessary? A lot of things remain to be seen. You have to, I guess, trust that Vic Fangio knows what he's going to do and know that the personnel decisions that they have made have had significant credit or significant input from Fangio. I'm just not so sure right now. Like, again, you have to look at what is in front of you right now. It can't all just be hypotheticals. It can't all just be this is what we aspire to find in the draft. They're going to have to make some tangible improvements for this to be a Super Bowl contender. Moving off of Reddick to me is just not one of them. As of right now, I just don't see it. I could be wrong. I hope I'm wrong. I hope that Bryce Huff comes in and is an absolute stud. I hope that you see his playing time increase, that he gets to at least 50% of snaps, that he's not just a one-trick pony rushing the quarterback, that he is able to help in the run game a bit. There are a lot of things that you have to hope for. Josh Sweat, by the way, you know, the talk was, are they gonna move off of both Reddick and Sweat? Are they going to move one or the other? You clearly have committed to Sweat. You better hope that Sweat takes the next step, because a season ago, no. You know, we'll see. Now, I want to get to the other teams in the city, one that just started their season and one that's also getting ready to potentially enter the postseason. Let's get to the Phillies first. I think at this point, we all know each other well enough. And if you have followed me on Twitter for any time, you're probably acutely aware of how I feel about Zach Wheeler and how I feel about Aaron Nola, okay? And what we saw in the first two games of the series are exactly what I expected to have happen. Zach Wheeler, when the Phillies acquired him, my take at the time, and Craig can probably find it because Craig is somehow a master of finding my old tweets. Zach Wheeler, when he got brought into Philadelphia, I said, there's your stud. There's your ace. There's your number one. And at the time, a lot of people said, no, it's still Aaron Nola's team. Aaron Nola is still the ace. This is just a fortifying move. This is just going to help the front end of the rotation. But Zach Wheeler doesn't take the top spot. It's Aaron Nola. He's the guy that you draft. He's the guy that you developed. He's the guy that you keep giving the opening day start to. Aaron Nola's the guy. Zach Wheeler's just going to be a really, really good number two. Or maybe he's like your second ace. And then you look at this. Back in August of 2020, in his first season as a Philly, I think I said something before this, but is it too early to wonder whether Zach Wheeler is the real ace of the Philly staff? Craig, go down to the replies to that. I just want to see what people said. Not too early. Nope. Seen Nola for last year. Not be very good. Remember, these are all from 2020. Maybe just a little too late to be wondering. Let's revisit this in a few hours. He is. Until Nola gets his much-needed help from the offense, I can totally see Wheeler being their ace. He has to be by default, throws heat, should be a very good pitcher for the Phillies. I think we have to wait and see what his ceiling can be. Yada, yada, yada. Okay. I don't think that Aaron Nola has it. I don't think he has the ace makeup. I really don't. Now, I have not had a conversation with Aaron Nola. I have not sat down with the people close to him in his life to get a better idea of what he is as a person. But Aaron Nola, to me, just is not an ace. He doesn't exude ace confidence. He has ace stuff sometimes. He, I think, is the most maddening pitcher they've had in at least a decade, because you can watch him on a day where he's on, and he has ace stuff. Oh, here we go. September of 2020. Zach Wheeler, two must-win games to end the season. Zach Wheeler, seven innings pitched, seven hits, four earned runs. Aaron Nola, 3 2/3, six hits, three runs. I just don't see it. I think that Zach Wheeler's a gamer. I think that Wheeler's a guy that you can rely on in big games. I know that he had a moment last postseason that maybe wasn't ideal, but I do think that Zach Wheeler has the ace mentality. I think that Aaron Nola is just a guy who, like, is comfortable. Aaron Nola is a guy who, again, has the ability, has the pitches, has the pitch variety. And, like, were it not for the fact that he gives up the long ball at the rate that he does, probably would be like a really good number two pitcher. But the compounding problem in all of this is they just gave him another massive contract. And when we talked at the end of last year, and it probably wasn't here, I think it was on Snow the Goalie, when the Flyer season was wrapping up, we kind of dove into the Philly side of things a little bit. You know, Ant San Francisco is like the big Aaron Nola guy, likes to tell everybody that we're wrong, and that there are a bunch of underlying numbers that show that Aaron Nola is a top 10 pitcher and he's a top 3 pitcher in the NL or whatever the hell he says. And it's like, you have to look at what is put in front of you. You have to look at the sample size and you have to be objective about it. And Nola has great stuff, but it's not here. He doesn't have it up top. There's something, there is a disconnect. There's a cognitive disconnect between what he is physically capable of doing and what ends up happening on game day. And again, like, you can have these moments where he goes out and he throws seven innings, he gives up two runs, and they happen to both be like solo home runs, and you go, oh, well, at least he only gave up two, and, you know. But the home run thing is a real concern. And for this team to have had happen what happened in the first game, right, where Wheeler goes out, pitches like a stud for six innings, probably could have pitched a seventh, though he noted that in spring training he didn't get stretched out as much as he might have wanted to. He gets six innings, six great innings, and then the bullpen totally implodes. And it's funny because MLB.com going into this season said that the Phillies' best bullpen in the entire league, right? Kind of goofy. And sorry, in the majors. Goofy, okay? I don't know who did that evaluation. I certainly can't imagine that anybody who watched the Phillies, who saw the bullpen they put together, would have put them as the number one bullpen in the city, but I digress. There you go. Top 10 bullpens for 2024 from Major League Baseball. Phillies, number one. Braves, number two. Pittsburgh, number three. Then Houston, Tampa, Dodgers, Cardinals, Brewers, Twins. And then tied for 10th, Blue Jays and Cubs. Again, I don't know what metrics they were taking into account. Via FanGraphs, war projections. Okay. So maybe Ant's helping FanGraphs. Maybe this is all like an Ant San phony campaign. I will note that our two Phillies guys, Big Bet Bob, Big Baseball Bob, and Ant San Francisco, they both said on Crossed Up, which you should go listen to and subscribe to. You can find it on this Crossing Broad YouTube channel, or you can find it wherever you get your podcasts. They both picked the Phillies to win the World Series. It's only been three games. And by the way, the Phillies won the third game, all right? Ranger Suarez, looking good. You have to get past the Braves. And there is such an, I think there's such an impotence on, you need to make sure that you don't get super far behind the Braves. Like, they cannot have a rough start to the season again. They've, to some extent, been lucky that they've been able to start seasons as poorly as they have and then force their way into the playoffs through the wild card. And that's great. And the fact that you've been able to get to a World Series, got to the NLCS, like, it's all great. However, the downside is, you almost fall into this malaise at the start of the season, and there's probably a small part of you that says, yeah, but we heat up. When the weather heats up, we heat up. Then we get really good down the stretch, and then we go on these magical playoff runs, and that's great, but like at some point, you know, they don't turn over a lot of the roster. Much of the lineup is the same. You talk about like clubhouse culture. A lot of it hasn't changed, and the definition of insanity, right? Like doing the same thing again and again, expecting different results. I'm not saying that they're fully insane. But I am saying that, like, when you don't make enough changes, yes, there is something to be said for chemistry and consistency and thinking that, like, hey, we're not that far off. We do have the ability to take this thing to the next level. And we do have the ability. You run it back, and you tweak a couple of things here and there, and maybe you do get over the hump the next year. My problem is I still look at the top of the lineup as being a legitimate concern, a legitimate problem. Ford checks in on YouTube. I don't think the Phillies are going to win a title with Harper. I think that what is happening is in front of our eyes is a bunch of guys who are very good getting older and their window is closing. I don't know if I'd go that far yet. I still think that they can win a title with Harper. You certainly have to hope so, given how much time he has left and the fact that he made no secret that he wants to be re-upped and extended. I do think that they have the ability to win one. But, I look at like a guy like Nick Castellanos, who was so unpredictable last year. He was so inconsistent. The talk going into the offseason was like, oh, maybe they're going to move on from Nick Castellanos and try to get somebody in who can be their right-handed bat that can be more consistent. Hasn't happened, right? There was a thought that maybe they'd move on from Alec Bohm. Didn't happen. They have effectively run out most of the same lineup. Now, Bryce Harper almost died at first base over the weekend, chasing down a foul ball. And it's one of those times where you once again say, hey, love the hustle. Love the fact that it's got like a little bit of the Jeter vibes, right? But the problem with the Bryce Harper going over the railing thing is you can't afford to have him miss time. But you also don't want to fundamentally change who he is as a player. His edge is what sets him apart. His edge is what made you want to go after him more so than a Manny Machado, right? Who played a premium position, by the way. Like, there are plenty of reasons that, you know, if you're the Phillies that you wanted to go after a Bryce Harper, you can't just tell him to change who he is. And he's hardwired a certain way. And I think if you start making him overthink and you start making him think too much about playing safely, you're probably not going to get the full Bryce Harper experience. However, you can't have him going over the railing after a foul ball down the first base line near the dugout. Like that just doesn't make sense. There's virtually no positive to it. And like, here it is. He clearly doesn't sense the fence coming. He does slow down because he feels himself getting to the, onto the dirt. But he flies over the railing. And then he gets up and, like, he bounces back, you know, good on him and all that. But, like, this isn't a play that you need. It's not a play that you need this early into the season. This isn't with, like, a playoff spot on the line. This isn't with the division on the line. I think it's a somewhat irresponsible play. But again, I get it. It's who he is, and it's part of the challenge that you take on when you put so much of this team's identity behind him. Is those are the plays that he expects to make. Those are the plays that he wants to make that you've now grown accustomed to him making. It just makes me nervous. It really does. If he goes out for an extended period of time, we saw what this lineup was last year without him. It was passable. It was fine at times. Sometimes it was really good. It was very streaky. But him being in the lineup takes so much pressure off of everyone else. It allows these other guys to breathe. You just can't have him get hurt like that. And then the question becomes, all right, he's had some significant injuries. If he gets hurt again, you don't want to run the risk. And I saw it over here, Nat Marlowe on YouTube. Is Harper the new Embiid? No, because Harper, while he's had some injuries, and some have been really serious, I don't think you ever wonder about if Harper's going to be able to come back and be in shape. It's a very different game. I understand that. Embiid is also a legitimate giant. However, I think Harper and Embiid are two very different kinds of players. And now I don't think that Harper getting hurt would make him the new Joel Embiid. I don't. But if the question is, like, based on the amount of players that you have, based on the way that you build a team in baseball, one player should not change your trajectory and your ceiling as much as losing a Joel Embiid, an MVP, in a five-man lineup on a team that probably is going to play 8 to 10 players at most in the postseason. There is a big difference. I understand it because of the star player comparison and the injuries, but no, it's not the same thing. Not at all. All right. Was there anything else we wanted to get to on the Phillies? There was a funny thing. Craig, I dropped it in the chat to you. Maybe the funniest moment of the weekend came on Easter Sunday, where a Braves announcer suggests that Phillies fans would have booed Jesus after the resurrection. Craig, can we pull that up with the audio? Because it was funny. Go to the 28-second mark. We don't need to listen to the Braves announcers go for, you know, a ton of time, but it was around the 28-second mark. Just
two balls and no strikes. Orlando grounded out back in the second inning. He's 0-for-1. Even on Easter.
Yeah, right. No let-up. Doesn't matter. They might have booed Christ after the resurrection.
I don't think so.
I don't know. I wasn't there that day.
No one is immune here in Philadelphia.
All right, Craig, that's enough. So I have to say, like, I'm sitting at the table having the Easter meal, right? And I bring this up. Now, full disclosure, my father-in-law is a deacon, but he's not a very deacon-y deacon. He is. He's a deacon. Deacon's a deacon. But he doesn't, like, exude the stuffiness that you typically get from somebody who's, like, clergy, right? And so I read that, and I'm expecting that, like, my in-laws or someone else at the table might be like, ooh, I don't know. I don't know about that one. Everybody laughed because it was a funny line. And you know what? In fairness, Philly fans probably would have booed Jesus after the resurrection. Entirely possible, right? Philly fans boo anything. And that's part of what makes Philly fans Philly fans, all right? And, like, I didn't actually see that many people getting outraged about it. I didn't see that many people say, like, that's an unfair thing. This is just going to be, like, the new Santa Claus thing. It's like, no, it's fun. It's actually a pretty funny line by a Braves announcer. Hopefully, Phillies get the last laugh later in the season when they win the division. Maybe. Maybe not. I don't know. I wouldn't put money on the Phillies to win the NL East. Could be wrong, but I don't think so. But maybe. But probably not. All right, let's get to the last team in town. I don't mean the Philadelphia Union, and I'm really sorry. And, like, I know that I've talked about this before, and I know that I've said in the past that I wanted to talk Union at some point, and, like, maybe I will. You have to understand, I think I was a member of the Sons of Ben before the city even had a team. I was a season ticket holder when I first got married. I loved the Union. Absolutely loved the Union. That was, like, the one team, them and the Sixers, were, like, the teams I'd let myself really be a fan for, right? But I have a really hard time getting into the Union because I know how this story ends. It's the same way that I've been saying with the Sixers. When you don't have Joel Embiid, you know how that's going to go. And if Joel Embiid comes back and he's less than 100%, you kind of know how that one's going to go. The Union will always get close and not win the big one because their ownership is so cheap. Jay Sugarman is so cheap. And like, I could sit here and we could have a conversation about Julian Carranza, and we could have a chat about Daniel Gosdag, and we could talk about whether or not it was the right call to re-sign Ali Bedoya in the offseason. We can have those talks about how does Kai Wagner look, you know, the fact that he said some pretty stupid, awful things on the field last season. Did that lead to no other team wanting to go after him, and that's why he re-upped with the Union? I don't know. We could have those conversations. Maybe at some point we can talk about that, okay? Maybe. But right now, the Union aren't doing it for me. And I'll be honest, I've been paying for MLS season pass for the last 2 years, and I think that I have not turned it on at all this season so far because I don't feel the need to. I don't feel like the Union are really worth the time right now. I have very limited screen time. When you have four kids, you have to make a decision about what you're going to watch. The Union aren't up there right now. They're just not. Union right now, for those who are wondering, and I'm sure it's many of you, have won 2 games, 3 draws, no losses. The undefeated Philadelphia Union, right up there with Cincinnati as another undefeated team in the East. That's great. We'll see in a few weeks. Maybe we will get to, I think like once things start to settle down, I think that once the Sixers kind of go the way they're going to and the Flyers go the way that they're going to, then we will talk Union on this show because it'll be Union and Phillies all summer. And we'll absolutely get into them at that point. But right now, I don't know. So let's get to the other team. Let's get to the last team in town. And that, of course, is the orange and black, the Philadelphia Flyers. They've had a pretty meaningful week or so. They got out of the gauntlet. They got through a really, really rough stretch of games that they had no business competing in some of them. And then they followed it up with a couple of stinkers. All right, so they've now lost 4 straight games. They did pick up a point in Madison Square Garden against the Rangers, but they lost 4-1 at home to the Panthers. They lost on the road 6-5 in overtime against the Rangers. They lost at Montreal, which is a game you simply could not lose. And then they followed it up with an even worse performance on Tuesday night. Or sorry, not Tuesday, on Saturday night, when they lost at home to the Chicago Blackhawks. And now the Flyers are in a position that they certainly do not want to be. And Craig very astutely brings this up on the screen. But if you look at the standings right now, the amount of games played, and you take into consideration what the context of all this is, it could be very bad for the Flyers very soon. So the Flyers have 7 games left. Tonight is a must win, and I am not one of the shock jock people on the radio that does the, "Oh, it's a must win, guys! It all comes down to this one! If the Flyers lose this one, the season's over!" We're not having that conversation, but I will say that this is the first time all year that I'm saying tonight is a must win, because you have to look at what is in front of you. The Flyers have 82 points. The Islanders, who are in town, have 77. The difference is that the Islanders have 2 games in hand. So that's 4 potential points in hand. If you lose this game tonight, it's a 4-point swing, right? You would stay at 82. They would get to 79. Then they could potentially get 4 more, and all of a sudden, they're ahead of you. The bigger concern is that Washington is now also ahead of you. They have 2 games in hand. They're tied on points at 82. But they have 2 games in hand. So there's another 4 points potentially out there for Washington. The other concern is these teams, Washington and the Flyers, they will play each other on the last day of the season. So even if you're the Flyers and you get through this game against the Islanders with a win, which you need, and you don't just need a win, you need a win in regulation. You need to get as many points as you can and limit the damage that the other teams you're battling with can potentially pick up. They have got to get 2 points tonight against the Islanders and do it in regulation and assert themselves as the dominant team, okay? I don't know what it's going to look like tonight. I want to get into this in a little bit, but, like, it's a legitimate concern. You look at what they have coming. It's Islanders tonight, at the Sabres on Friday, then at Columbus on Saturday. Those have to both be wins as well. Then on Tuesday, they're at Montreal again. You better get revenge against Montreal. Then they're at the Rangers, which I don't like their chances. The Rangers have had their number for a long time, and I don't like the chance of them being able to all of a sudden flip it. Could they get a point in overtime again? It's possible. Then you look at it. They're at home against the Devils, who are still sort of in striking distance. You know, like, the Islanders have 77 points, the Devils have 76. The difference is that the Devils only have one game in hand, the Islanders have two. I don't think that the Devils are going to make a run here, but the Devils might want to play spoiler in the next to last game of the season for the Flyers. And then, again, you are welcoming the Capitals to town in the final game of the season, and that is a legitimate concern. And if you are a Flyers fan, you have got to hold these teams accountable, and you have to see what happens, because them losing four straight is bad, but the way that they lost to Montreal and the way that they lost to Chicago, bad. Poor starts, looked lethargic, looked gassed, and only managed to pot one goal in each game. Now, John Tortorella said after the game against the Blackhawks that they sucked and that they looked gassed, that especially Travis Sanheim and Cam York looked gassed. And I always come back to the same thing that we've said all year. When you are a talent inferior team, a talent deficient team like the Flyers, they are not going to compete for a Stanley Cup. They have said as much. The front office has said as much on Snow the Goalie, the only Flyers podcast. They've said it all year. We're not going to compete for a cup. If you make the playoffs, it's great. Also, not necessarily something that they were penciling themselves in for. They're in a position right now where you need every point you can get. And after they got 6 points in that seven-game gauntlet, the idea was pick up the points that you can against some of these inferior teams. It allows you to have a hiccup. It allows you to have an off night against one of them. But, like, tonight's game is huge because the Islanders are kind of, in their own way, sort of riding a high as well. You know, like, they are in a spot where, like, they are potentially in playoff position. Now, they've been rough the last 10 games. They're 2-7-1. But they can, again, get a four-point swing tonight. They can pull to within 3 points of the Flyers. They can get closer to the Capitals. And if you look at the other side of things, over in the Atlantic Division, where we long thought, you know, five of the eight playoff spots are going to come from the Atlantic and three are going to come from the Met, the Red Wings are in free fall. And Dylan Larkin got hurt the other night, 30 seconds into the game against Florida. They're sitting on 80 points, but they are going the wrong way, and they're going the wrong way fast. Is it possible that only four of the playoff spots will come out of the Atlantic? Yes, it is possible. And in that case, it's the Capitals, Flyers, and Islanders battling for two wild card spots. But if you're the Flyers, your goal has to be get that top wild card spot in the Met. Like, get that third, or get the third spot in the Met and see where the chips fall. I'm concerned because, again, these guys are gassed. They are. They're all the way down. There's practically nothing left. None. I don't know what the Flyers actually have to give. And they have been overextending some of their better players because they are so talent deficient. Sean Couturier has really struggled. He was obviously scratched. It was a questionable call at the time. He's not exactly bounced back with a stellar play and made John Tortorella look like a fool. I do think that the bounce back that the Flyers had, the kind of little extra pick-me-up they had in their step, the pep in their step after Coots got scratched, was short-lived, clearly. I worry that they're going to start making some desperate moves. Nick Seeler got back in the lineup last game. Jamie Drysdale is going to be in the lineup tonight. I worry about it because Jamie Drysdale hurt the same shoulder that cost him to miss significant time in Anaheim. And from where I stand, you better hope that he's 100%. You better hope that shoulder is not going to be compromised. Because if, God forbid, at some point in this playoff run or the stretch trying to get into the playoffs, God forbid he gets hurt on that shoulder again and has to have surgery, he's going to miss significant time. And he'd probably miss a good chunk of the start of next year if he had to get shoulder surgery again. So it all comes down to whether or not it's worth it. Clearly, the doctors have cleared him. Clearly, they believe that Jamie Drysdale coming back in and being the QB on power play, on the top power play unit on PP1, is something that's going to lift their ceiling. I just don't know if it's a good call. It feels like a short-term move with potentially long-term consequences if it doesn't go well. If it goes right, then all of a sudden maybe you take a team that has had a historically bad power play, converting it only like 13% this season. Maybe you bring in a guy like Jamie Drysdale back into the fold and you're able to get a few power play goals. You're able to get things going in the right direction. Maybe it helps. And you have to think, like, the power play has been so bad that like nothing at this point could make it worse. Having Jamie Drysdale in, even if he's not 100% on that top power play unit, you have to think that that at least makes them better, makes them more competitive, gives them a less of a disparity in special teams. Their penalty kill has of late kind of dropped down a little bit. It was super, super elite, and then it's kind of struggled a little bit. Again, I think it has to be with these guys being gassed, with them being so wiped out, with them being overexerted. We'll see if Drysdale's reinsertion into the lineup is the catalyst to push them forward, and you have to hope that it starts tonight with the Islanders. The other big thing that happened, and we are going to see when it's going to happen, and it wasn't just a big thing, it was a big thing. Ivan Fedotov came over from the KHL, a guy who 2 years ago signed a contract with the Philadelphia Flyers. He makes his way stateside. There was the report that came out last week that his KHL team, CSKA Moscow, terminated his contract and that they were working on a solution, the KHL, the NHL, the Flyers, and Moscow, that they were trying to figure out a way to get this guy over here. There was also the question about the IIHF because they had suspended him for honoring a contract with the Russian team when the IIHF had ruled that his contract with the Flyers was valid. There's a whole big thing about the Flyers having to appeal to the league to port his contract a year because he had to go off and serve his 1 year of military service time 2 years ago. It's all kind of a mess. I would encourage you to go over and listen to Snow the Goalie, where we gave a lot more context on it. But the big thing is Fedotov comes in, and because of an emergency recall that they had to make around the redacted Carter Hart move, they've been able to move Fedotov in where Felix Sandstrom was as the backup. Torts said that he doesn't know what exactly Fedotov is. This was as of a few days ago. He didn't know what Fedotov is. He really doesn't know what to expect from him, and that he was going to defer to Kim Dillabaugh, the goalie coach, to make those decisions on when he's ready and what he can bring to the lineup. He's not playing tonight. He didn't play on Saturday. One has to think that he's going to play one of the two games this upcoming weekend, this back-to-back that the Flyers have. He almost has to. He either has to play at Buffalo or at Columbus, and then you're going to get an idea. Now, for those who haven't seen it, Craig, this is one of the things I wanted to have you pull up, and it's on the Flyers' Twitter account from a few days ago. But Fedotov is massive. He's the biggest goalie in NHL history. He's 6'8". To say that it looks like he's an adult playing on a kid's net would be putting this very lightly. And if you have not yet seen Fedotov on the ice, if you've not seen these pictures yet, there's one of him with Danny Briere where it looks like Danny Briere is his kid. He's that much taller. But there's a picture of Fedotov in front of the Flyers goal at Skate Zone, or they call it the training center now, the Flyers training center in Voorhees. He looks like he's playing on a child's net. The crossbar is at his hip. All right, like now, if you think about it as a goalie, as you're crouching down, you're remaining on your feet, right? Not down in butterfly. There's like a certain height that you kind of accept as being normal, mid chest as you're kind of hunched down. Fedotov, I don't know. Craig found a video. I don't know what this video is. I haven't seen this one yet, but maybe this is going to show. Oh, there it is. All right. So Fedotov, when he's in net, and there's a picture of him standing in front of it, but like when he's standing, there you go, the crossbar is at his hip. It's at his hip. That's absurd. It's insane. Now, there are a lot of questions. We had Bill Meltzer on the Press Row show pregame on Saturday, and he talked about how hard it can be for a big guy like Fedotov to get down because he's so huge, and that it's something that they've worked on. It's something that he's worked on with getting the angles right. And the KHL game is a lot different from the NHL game. There's a lot more traffic in front of the net in the NHL than in the KHL. But so much of what's happening, so much of what is going to affect the Flyers' chances of making the playoffs is getting some of these guys who have not looked like themselves, like a Couturier, to some extent like a Konechny at times, to get guys like York and Seeler and Sanheim and Drysdale all kind of rowing in the right direction. Getting all those guys clicking at the same time is huge. This guy, Ivan Fedotov, is going to be big as well because you are not going to start Sam Harrison in every game down the stretch as you try to make the playoffs. There is so much riding on this guy. He's 27. He's played in the KHL. He had a really good season for Moscow. We still don't know what it's going to look like. We still don't know how he's going to acclimate, but we're going to find out. Now, there's one last thing I wanted to get to, and it's not a team-related thing. I said last week that I was going to be very interested to see, because a week ago, the announcement came out, I think the morning that we did this show, that Anthony Gargano was going to be starting his new show over at PHLY. I wished him the best. I wish all the people who over there who worked the best, because as I mentioned, media jobs are disappearing left and right. Want to see everybody do well. He was clearly supposed to be the centerpiece, the glue that kind of held everything together over there, the centerpiece, the focal point of everything they were doing. Brings on a guy from this show, a guy from this show. Brings on, you know, like Renee Washington, I think is the only woman on staff, or is the only one who's like a full-timer over there. I think Kelly Hinkle comes in with the flyer stuff sometimes, but like I don't think there are a lot of women who work over there. Could be wrong. Maybe I am wrong. Correct me in the comments if I am wrong. But I think the idea was that he was going to bring people in from different parts, from different shows, and was going to kind of use his show as kind of the vehicle to get people to go from him, where he was expecting to have a really big audience, and push them to the team-specific shows. So that if you didn't previously listen to Zach Berman and Bill Wolf's show with The Athletic, that you would give it a chance. That if you didn't listen to Charlie O'Connor and Bill Matz, that you would give that a chance. That if you didn't listen to Bodner and Hoffman and Newbeck, that you would give it a chance. I monitored the traffic because I said I was going to a week ago, and I was very interested to see what the concurrent streams were going to look like, and I was interested in seeing what the total number was going to look like. And I can't imagine that it has gone the way that they had hoped it was going to over at PHLY. I can't imagine it did. I said last week, if you only have 500-600 people watching, it's going to be a real concern. You hope that you're going to get for his first show back in the market in, I think, 6 months or so, that he was going to have over 1,000 concurrent the entire time the show is going on. And if anything, you would want to see that in that first hour from 9 to 10, you were going to want to see some significant growth, that if it started at 1,000, that you were going to get to like 1,400 or 1,500 at least by the second hour, by 10 o'clock. And that like it might dip around then, right, as people are kind of getting settled into work, like it might dip, and then you would see that number kind of pick up after the fact when you get the total viewership on YouTube. And again, I did mention that, like, yes, they're doing a podcast as well, but I don't think Philly Sports Talk Radio translates the same way with what now it appears his show is going to be. And he talked about callers on the first day, which I don't think is a good idea, but I could be wrong. Because if he does that, then it goes from being podcast and YouTube show to being radio. And I don't think there's nearly as much appetite for that after the fact in a podcast feed. He had about 640 viewers at times during that first show. I think it might have gone above that a couple of times, but it was around 630, 640. On Friday's show, he was around like the 430, 445 mark, so about 33% drop. And then I saw earlier today for the third show, the first one of this new week, a weekend where you're coming off of, you know, the Eagles made a move, and like he did a show after they made that move. But like, again, a little bit of Eagles talk, Joel Embiid coming back, the Phillies having their first series, it's wrapped up. You could talk about Phillies Braves. The audience was like 300, and so it dipped again. So again, you went 650-ish to 440-ish to around 300, and there was a good chunk of the show today where it was around 235. That's not good. That's not a good sign. Again, I wish everybody the best. I want that to work. I want those people to succeed. Media jobs disappearing. But that can't be a good feeling. And if you've invested VC capital like Andre Iguodala's team has, where you're putting significant money behind a venture, that's not a good number. There's no way to parse that. In fact, I'll tell you why it's not a good number. Because Snow the goalie doing post-game has done a bigger number than 235. Snow the goalie has done better than 300 concurrent viewers in the past week. I think we went over 400 when the Fedotov press conference was going on, and we had not put out any announcement that we were going to be covering it or doing a show after the fact. I don't think timing-wise it lined up that we were head-to-head, but again, like Snow the goalie, great show, the only Flyers podcast. We shouldn't be in a spot where we're outdrawing on YouTube what a guy who's had decades in the market is doing and a guy who has been out of the market for 6 months, but everybody knew was going to be coming back. I get that they couldn't announce it way ahead of time. I know that they had to be really careful, but like he did the national show with Baldy for football. If it were me, I'd be concerned. And here's where I think the concern maybe continues to spread and like where maybe it does become a little bit more of a problem for them. I mentioned that there are Philly sports media adjacent people, radio hosts, other writers who might have been looking for another outlet to go write for, to go host a show for. And I brought up the name John Marks, and I said, I think that John Marks will likely go to one of two places. I said he may end up with 97.5 in a few months after Missinelli maybe goes and takes over the midday show, and they want to see if having a better lead-in from the middays is going to help that afternoon show, the best show ever, which is not. Like, will, you know, if they get the midday show number up, and the afternoon show doesn't go up or go down, then you have to think about making a change. And I said, well, then John Marks can kind of ride in on the horse, on the white horse at the end, and say, like, I'm here. I'm going to take the afternoons. And he found a lot of success on WIP in the afternoons. And, like, could he lead the charge against his former show, against his former employer, Spike Eskin, and against his former co-host, Ike Reese, and his former producer, Jack Fritz? Like, could Johnny Marks have done it? And I said, that to me is the more intriguing thing. I do not get the sense, after talking to a few people since we did last week's show, I've not gotten the sense that that is the thing that's on the table right now. I've not gotten the feeling that it's something that Beasley is interested in right now. I've not gotten the feeling that it's something that he'd be interested in doing the afternoons. He gave a lot of reasons why he was done doing afternoons in Center City for WIP. And again, I don't think you want to go up against a powerhouse in the ratings like the afternoon show is. So then, all right, so if you're John Marks, or if you're somebody else who's been in radio before who's looking for another outlet, do you want to go to PHLY? Well, if they pay you what I've been told a good number of the people over there are making, yeah, short term, it's a great move. Totally great move. I'm not going to disclose anything here because I don't think it would be the right thing to do, but I can tell you that the numbers that I have been told, the numbers that have been reiterated by multiple people, is that there are certain people over at PHLY who are making significantly more than they were making at their prior outlets. And some of the numbers are such that you sitting at home or wherever you are, if you knew the salary number, your eyes would bug out of your head for being a writer who's like doing an hour a day show, okay? So if it's me and I'm one of those radio people, I don't know if that's the way to go, because I would have looked at it as, all right, Gargano's finally there. Have there been billboards? I've been driving into Wells Fargo Center to go watch and cover Flyers games. I have not seen an Anthony Gargano billboard announcing him at PHLY. Will it happen now that we're in April instead of the end of March? I don't know. You would think that that would have been a smart thing. Have they taken out ads in the Inky? Like, listen, I know the Inquirer is what it is. But, like, have they done that? I don't know. And, again, I'm not looking to give them a ton of different advice and pointers. But I will say that, once again, a concern that I had when they tried to buy Snow the goalie last summer is that you're putting a lot of eggs in one basket, and for that basket, that being Anthony Gargano, you're putting a lot into that. There's a lot of onus on that working. There's a lot of onus on that being the thing, and that audience that he had on terrestrial radio, changing their everyday routine of listening to him in the car and saying, I'm going to now switch to YouTube. And I said at the time, I said on a call with their CEO, that that was a concern, and that in terms of what we were doing, I didn't know if a daily show was a really good idea for a sports podcast because it ends up watering things down. A lot of concerns. I expressed a lot. And ultimately, we chose not to go that route. We chose not to sell our show. I once again am in a spot where I say so many of the things that have happened there that have prevented growth, from my estimation, they continue to happen. Gargano, the thing that I cannot understand, and I said it last week, the thing that I did not get, I said it on Thursday's show with Kincaid, the thing that I didn't get is when Gargano started his show, he noted that it's a startup, which it is not, because it has been live in three other markets before Philly, and the Philly market has had this for like 6 months now. It's not really a startup. It's newish to the market, but they've been able to work out some of the growing pains. I fear that if that number for him doesn't go up at some point here significantly, you run the risk of a lot of people getting very uncomfortable because they put out some revenue targets to the public. I think they said $10 million in revenue is what they wanted to do in the first year. And I laughed at that last year, and I laugh at it again this year. And I could be wrong, but if you're an advertiser and you're looking at it and you're saying, all right, there's no radio element to this, we can see the actual number on YouTube. And then, like, you would think that a sponsor would inquire about what the podcast feed downloads are. If you look at it and you say, all right, there are 3,000 or 4,000 people total who listen to Anthony Gargano's show on YouTube. They watch it. And then you go to the podcast feed. Say he does the same number. Let's even round up. Let's say he does 10,000 subscribers or 10,000 YouTube views and 10,000 podcast feed. Like, I'm being desperate here to try to help make the numbers make sense. Okay. If we go at like a somewhat revenue standard of let's say $25, or let's say because he's got name recognition, let's say $30 per 1,000 viewers or listeners, all right, $30, 10,000 total people, that's $300 an episode, right? Craig, you're following me with the math there on the other side of the glass? $30 per 1,000 subscribers or viewers or listeners, 10,000, $300 a show. You do that over the course of 5 days a week, right? Or at $1,500, you figure multiply that by 4 weeks in a month, give or take, because sometimes it's five. You're looking at $6,000, maybe $7,500 worth of advertising dollars per sponsor, per show that he does. I don't know how you get to 10 million. I don't know. That number has got to get bigger, where I think the whole thing is in a weird spot. You can keep pumping in venture capital money as much as you want. And listen, there are VC firms who are going to look at it and say, successful in three markets, it's doing well enough here. If they expand to Cleveland, to Boston, maybe eventually to a New York, could they continue to like increase the potential value? If RSNs all fail, like, can they get the audio stream to games? Could they try to get the Sixers to say, hey, screw 97.5, no more streaming the games there, stream them on PHLY's site? They could try, and maybe it would work. And maybe that's another, you know, ad revenue stream that they think they can have. But what I do think you're going to see is a lot of these teams are going to take their own audio streams in-house. I think that you're going to see at some point, I could be wrong, the Eagles won't, because their partnership with WIP is really good for them and for their brand, and I think it's the same for the Phillies. But I think that for the Sixers, maybe for the Flyers, maybe for the Union, you look to just make as much revenue as you can on your audio feed, and you think, am I really getting that much more for splitting the revenue with the radio station? I do think that a lot of teams and a lot of markets in the U.S. and Canada, they're all going to do the same thing. They're going to take it all internal, all in-house. And then I think one of those big potential revenue streams for a digital outlet are going to go away. And so that's a thing. Now, Kevin at IROC Philly on YouTube says, when Missinelli left 97.5, he was asked on Twitter about going to PHLY and didn't rule it out. Now it sounds like he's headed back to 97.5. One thing I can tell you is that like there were a lot of rumors of him being in conversations with or at least interested in going to PHLY, whether it was to partner with Gargano or to do 2 hours before or after, okay? So there's Johnny Marks. He can be here. Hello, John. Anybody who might want to go and be on either side of Gargano's show, or maybe they do a night show, maybe they do a new morning show, it's really tricky, and the numbers just don't add up right now. Again, if somebody gets a really good offer, I don't know. Where's Rob? Is Rob Ellis on WIP now? Or is he doing Jacob Media, or does he do both? Let me use Paul Jolowitz, because Anthony went over on a show I've never heard of with Paul Jolowitz last week at a Chickies and Pete's that's like near my house, okay? Let's say Paul Jolowitz decided he wanted to go to PHLY, and they said, we're going to pay you $150,000 to do a show 2 hours a day, 5 days a week. Paul Jolowitz would probably be an idiot not to take that, because that's a really nice number to go and do a two-hour show, to not have to write anything, to not really have to commit to anything, to not have to be in a ratings battle, unless you're going to incentivize how many viewers somebody has or how many podcast downloads they have. I don't see it. So these people who might like at some point be interested, is it, you know, could a Missinelli use the potential conversation with 97.5 to parlay and, you know, get something from a place like PHLY? Could he do it? It's possible. Could a John Marks who just checked in, could he potentially have a conversation? Maybe. Could a Rob Ellis, could a Jolowitz, could those people decide, could a Neil Hartman come back to the market and try to tap into the old nostalgia for Comcast Sportsnet? I don't know. But you do have to think, like, all right, if I'm going to get paid really, really well for a year, is it worth it? And some people might say yes, and some people might say no. I express my concern, and I remain concerned for a lot of these people that what they have and what the numbers are and what the numbers are coming in at would not give me a lot of confidence if I were somebody looking to make a move to a digital outlet. But that's just me. I could be wrong. I don't think I am. I'm pretty sure I'm right. I'm pretty sure I've been right about this since last summer. But we'll see. And I will be monitoring it from now, the next few weeks. I'm not intending on doing a big segment on it every week, but I am going to monitor it. And again, I wish everybody the best. I hope everybody's successful. Again, I want all of the media jobs that exist in the city right now to remain, if not even grow. But I'm not so sure that that's the wagon I would want to hitch my millions and millions of VC capital to. So the next time that Andre Iguodala decides that he's going to take a few million dollars and throw it in, I might encourage his people to give us a Crossing Broad a call. Let's have a conversation, because there are some things that can be done where there might be a better ROI over here. And on that, it's time to end today's show. I want to thank everybody who came in on the live stream, on YouTube, on Facebook, on Twitter. And I want to thank everybody who listens after the fact in the podcast feed over on Apple Podcasts or Pandora or Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. At this point, if you have not done so already, make sure you subscribe. Yeah, how did I forget to mention this, Craig? How did I forget? Breaking news. We put this out on the Snow the Goalie Twitter this morning. Flyers head coach John Tortorella going to join the Press Row Show pregame at 6 o'clock. Scroll down, Craig. There you go. There were a bunch of people who took that tweet very seriously. They're like, oh my God, is he going to come on? Like, he apologized to Sandstrom last week. Is he going to come apologize to Anthony Sanfilippo too? No. Not going to happen. But anyway, we're going to see. We're going to see where things go. A big thank you to everybody who tuned in. And like I said, subscribe, especially on YouTube. Subscribe to the Crossing Broad YouTube channel. On Thursday, Kevin Kincaid will be back running lead on this show. Have a guest. I will hop on the show at some point, and we will see if anything else really big breaks in Philly sports. Like I mentioned, tonight, Flyers, Islanders, massive game for the orange and black. A must win, legitimately a 4-point game tonight against the Islanders. We're going to be doing the Press Row Show at 6:30 tonight. Myself, Bundy, and we'll be up in the balcony. If you go to section 121 in Wells Fargo Center, you go through the glass doors, tell them you're going to go up to the sports book. When you get out of the elevator and you come around, you'll see the Oregon and you'll see our setup. You can come shake hands, talk puck. We love having people up there. We had a guy drive down from Ontario with his daughter just to come talk to us and get a shirt from shop.snowthegoalie signed, which is still weird. I don't know why anybody would want my autograph or Ant's or intern Andrew's. I understand the Bundy of it all, but it's great. So, what is Ford flipping out about? What am I missing? I don't know what Ford is getting himself all in a tizzy in the comments, and I don't know why. And then Craig brings it up, and it just, you know, interrupts the end of the flow here. But anyway, we'll be back on Thursday, and you know, it's gonna be a great time here with Kevin Kincaid on Thursday. Thank you to everybody who tuned in. I'll be back next Monday. And Craig, drop the number on here. I haven't been pushing this for a while, but I will. And at some point, people are going to do this more. We had this a few weeks ago where people really did. Leave a message, 215-839-8477. When a big thing happens in Philly sports, call that number. Leave a message with your name and your thoughts. We'll play it on this show. We will, unless you say something really reprehensible. Okay? We'll play it on the show. We'll react to it. It'll be a lot of fun. We actually sort of have more call functionality in some way, and I know how to do it. We could have phone calls going through the show live, apparently before Anthony Gargano's show. Anyway, it's time for us to go. Everybody have a great rest of your day, a great rest of your week, and I will talk to you with Kinker on Thursday here on Crossing Broadcast.